So again, welcome to this retreat here in Perth. I know that many people come from interstate overseas. And some of you have been to my meditation retreats before. Some are coming here for the first time. But even if you've never been to a meditation retreat before, you have nothing to be afraid of here. Because over the years of teaching meditation, you discovered methods which are useful for both beginners and people who've meditated many, many times. And in particular, during this retreat, as many who have come to my retreats before know, we keep the schedule very loose. It doesn't mean that it's an opportunity just to be slack and not to do anything. Usually by keeping the schedule loose, you actually encourage people to make use of their time more wisely. Instead of having to keep to a schedule which doesn't usually match the progress of one's meditation, instead that one can adapt one's own schedule according to how one's meditation is progressing. What I mean by that is that in some of the retreats which I even went as a young man, they had 1 hour for sitting and half an hour for walking, or 45 sitting and 50 minutes walking. It was so regimented that what happened, there were times when I was really getting into the sitting or really enjoying the walking, and you had to stop. And that meant the progress was thwarted. It became obvious to me, especially when I became a monk, when you had very little schedule in the forest monasteries of northeast Thailand, that was there because we realized there will be times when one's meditation is getting very peaceful and very still. And the last thing you need when you're about to become enlightened is have a bell ring and stop you. But the point is that we have to be natural with our meditation, which means that when the meditation is going well, we carry on meditating. We don't worry about what time it is. And that way that we can get the most out of our meditation. And there are times when you sit down and actually it's the wrong thing to do. And if you have to meditate for, say, 1 hour and wait for the bell, you spend 40 minutes or half an hour just waiting in pain and suffering for a stupid bell to ring. And because of that, it doesn't never give you any peace or any happiness, which is important in meditation. So because of that, you may have all been very concerned about what the schedule is and looked at that schedule and try and take notes and try and even memorize what that schedule is. But instead of worrying too much about time, just be concerned about just the present moment. Here you're on a retreat, so we're supposed to have left the world, left the concerns of schedules and times and minutes and hours and days, and instead we've come to this beautiful now time, present moment awareness. If you can focus on that during this retreat, you'll find you'll have a lot of freedom. If you're so concerned about the schedules, now it's 8 o'clock, now it's 9 o'clock, now it's 10 o'clock, you'll find you'll just be a prisoner of this time which is made of craving. So instead of doing that, be someone who hardly ever looks at the clock. Sometimes people worry, they say, my goodness, I missed breakfast, I missed lunch, but I guarantee you will never miss the breakfast or you will never miss the lunch. It's amazing just how the body clock, especially the rumbling stomach, will tell you very clearly when breakfast is. And sometimes it doesn't matter how deep your meditation is, just the smell of lunch will penetrate any deep state of samadhi and you will come out. So you don't need to be so concerned about missing things. You've seen the schedule which has been printed up on the board there. You know, getting up at 4 o'clock, that is, I really do mean it's optional. Which means you can just use that as a framework. You don't have to get up that time. And especially for the first couple of days. The first couple of days you'll be coming. Some of you travel from long distances. Some of you have been working here in Perth and are very, very tired. You don't expect people to force their bodies to do what their bodies just cannot do and get up so early tomorrow morning. So for the first couple of days, take it easy. Don't struggle too hard. Don't make this thing just some like boot camp for like, you know, US Marines. This is a kind, compassionate meditation retreat, and it works much better. So take it easy when you get up in the morning. Have a shower, or, you know, just wash your face, whatever you wish to do. Maybe if you want to have a cup of coffee or a cup of tea or a glass of water in the kitchen, it will be open for you. And you can do some exercises out in the garden. This retreat center here is very wonderful. Not only do you have your own rooms, but you have this beautiful garden, which is ours for these next 9 days. So if you want to do some exercise, just to get the blood going into your brain again, and then come and sit and just see what happens. And if you have rested properly, in other words, not with fear of having to get up at a certain time, you will actually find that when you actually get up and you sit, the mind is peaceful. You're working with your mind rather than against it. And you're being mindful enough, aware enough to know when's the right time to get up. You're aware enough to know how long you need to meditate for, how long you need to walk for, how long you need to exercise for. So instead of stopping that mindfulness through bells, instead we use our own mindfulness as our bell to tell us when to get up and what to do and when. You'll find because of this, when you're not afraid to actually to sit longer or sit shorter, the meditation develops much better. During this retreat, we have our 8 precepts, which I don't need to give you. As soon as you come here or this moment on, they are just kept. We don't want to do too many ceremonies. Those 8 precepts: not deliberately killing a living being, not taking what's not given, not any sexuality whatsoever. We're just yogis on this retreat, which is one of the reasons why I almost encourage people sitting all over the place. In these retreats you don't have women on one side and men on the other side, because you're not a woman, you're not a man during this retreat. We try and give up all that sexuality during this time. And with no lying, and here, instead of actually no lying, we keep noble silence, which means there's actually no talking to each other during this retreat. There'll be opportunities to exercise your vocal cords in the morning and evening with a little bit of chanting, just to make sure that your speech is not completely ruined by the time the 9 days are over. There's also time for question time in the evening, and also interviews, which will come later on. But please don't go chatting to each other, especially in your rooms or in the corridors, because that's very disturbing to other people who want to meditate. And if somebody talks to you, you don't need to go to them and say, "Shut up," because then you're talking as well. So if anyone talks to you, just take one finger up and put it in front of your mouth and shh. So you're allowed to say shh, but nothing else. And that way, not only does it mean that you are not talking, it means that you are reminding other people about what noble silence is. The first day, if you never practiced this noble silence before, it seems strange and unnatural. But you'll find out that after 2 or 3 days it becomes such a pleasant abiding that you realize it has value. So don't ruin that for other people by chatting. Especially in the common areas, there should be no talking during the lunch period or the breakfast. If you're working in the kitchen, sometimes you need to say something to ask a question. But usually no talking about politics, cricket, or whatever else comes into your mind talking about. Just leave all that alone. Your job is actually to be inward looking rather than outward going. So that's why we don't break into speech. And we create this atmosphere of silence in this place. And that atmosphere of silence is so conducive to developing deeper meditations. When a person speaks, it's like a leaking bucket. Whatever energy they have built up, I'm talking about the energy of peacefulness, the energy of mindfulness, whatever they've built up over the meditations they've done so far, by talking is allowing all that stillness, all that peace just to leak out, which means you're just wasting money. It's like earning money then throwing the dollars and cents down the drain. So we don't need to do that. We keep this noble silence, this quietness, this inward looking. And that way, you're actually helping other people and helping yourself. So keep that a strict rule during this retreat. It also means like no mobile phones. So please, you know, turn your mobile phone off during this retreat. You'll find the world doesn't end if you don't have your mobile phone on. You'll find that, you know, your whole family doesn't sort of run away. Your business doesn't become bankrupt. You find that you can turn that thing off and leave the world, and everything is fine when you go home after 9 days. So that way you are helping the meditation along. So no speak, no noble silence, and also no mobile phones. And the next rule is obviously no alcohol or non-medicinal drugs, and also we don't have anything to eat in the evening, as you know from the what's been said already. In these retreats, I usually allow people, if they want to take any milk in the evening, that is fried or cheese, but nothing solid, unless you have the manager of this retreat permission, because you need something to eat because of some genuine medical need, you know, such as you may have diabetes or be taking some antibiotics or something. Then fine, you can take a sandwich or something, a little snack, but nothing much. And lastly, well, not lastly, but we don't have any entertainment, no makeup. In other words, actually we are who we are, rather than trying to pull on the face of something we're not. And no entertainment, no radios, no TVs, or whatever. Actually, there is a TV in the flat where the four monks are. And I usually say that in that little lounge room we have, any of my monks can go and sit in front of that TV and watch it during the retreat, as long as you don't turn it on. Because if you just watch the TV when it's not turned on, it's very, very peaceful. And if the lighting is right, you can see your own reflection. You can see who you really are. But if you turn it on, then you don't really see your own reflection. You don't have any stillness. And you just lose your present moment awareness and silence into some fantasy realm of violence, murder, whatever. So we have no entertainment during this, or rather no external stuff which takes us away from our inner world. And lastly, we just use ordinary furnishings, so nothing luxurious. So those are the 8 precepts, so there's no real need to explain them any further. You're supposed to keep these, so just keep them. You find it's very easy. And if you've got a rebellious mind and say, well, everyone else should keep these, but not me, I am special. So that's just coming from an ego and a sense of self. And you find that all you're really doing is just hurting and harming your own progress. You're not really making a point to other people, because I'm not going to throw you out if you misbehave. You're just going to create bad karma for yourself. That's all. So because of that, sort of keep these rules, because you value them, you see their purpose. That's why we have these 8 precepts. That's why we have the silence. That's why we have the simplicity. After a while, you'll just ease into this, and you will value this so much. But more than just the external little rules and procedures, which just keep a community of people like this meditating, reflecting in the best possible environment, we also have the practice which we're supposed to be doing. And I will begin this evening by just making perhaps the most important point about meditation. And the most important part about meditation, actually the most important part of whatever you're doing during this 9 days, is whatever you're doing, it's not what you're doing is so important as how you are doing it. It's the attitude of mind you have to what you're experiencing is a crucial factor for success in meditation. Which is why that I teach my monks to please make peace with whatever you're experiencing. If you make peace with whatever you're experiencing, rather than making war, rather than making any other difficulty, you'll find naturally the mind will become deeper and deeper in its stillness, in its silence, and in its clarity as well. There's a fundamental reason for this, and that is the understanding. This is one of the insights which I got many years ago, and it's such a powerful understanding to know that the energy of the mind comes from stillness. And every time you react, when you fight, you try and do something, you try and get somewhere, you try and make something different. Every time you struggle that way, you'll find you are wasting the energy of the mind. When you waste that energy, you never get the clear, powerful mindfulness, the deep happiness of meditation, which is a highly energized state of mind. But when you are still and make peace, so if you've got an ache in the body, make peace with it, don't fight it. You've got a restless mind even, make peace with it. You've got a tired mind, make peace with it. Somebody in your corridor is noisy, make peace with them. Somebody is, their stomach is churning all night, or they're farting, or whatever it is. Don't make a problem, make peace with it. In other words, just leave it alone. When you make peace with whatever you're experiencing, even if it's the food is not to your liking, or somebody doesn't turn up for their duties, or the retreat is not quite as you expected, just please make peace with things. So we don't develop the fault-finding mind. If you develop the fault-finding mind, you'll never get anywhere in your meditation. The meditation will never be good enough. The time will never be good enough. It's too hot, it's too cold, it's too early or too late. There are people fighting to get to the air conditioner switch. Somebody will turn it on and then someone will turn it off. Because you can never please everybody. So see if you can do the this is good enough, or making peace meditation. No fault finding. And if you can do that, you will find the whole meditation retreat will just go so smoothly, and you'll get into some states of mind which will really blow you apart. Some amazing stillness, simply because you spend every moment, or many moments, making peace with every moment. If you make war with every moment, you get what is called collateral damage. We all know what that is. We get angry, upset, depressed. But if you make peace with every moment, you'll find you are growing in peace. And that growth in peace leads to a natural mindfulness, very clear and very strong. Simply because, as I said, the energy of the mind comes from stillness. The more you are still, the more you just sit there, stay there, listen, not reacting, the more the energy just flows into the mindfulness. And mindfulness becomes stronger, more alert, more joyful. And it's the power of mindfulness which will generate the deep states of meditation, and also the great insights of meditation. So if you really want to develop your mindfulness during this retreat, just being silent is not enough. Keeping precepts is not enough. Sitting and walking, sitting and walking, sitting and walking is not enough. Sometimes you see people, they try and beat the record, see how long they can sit, how many hours they can tot up, how many steps they can walk, to see if they can get up earlier than anybody else and start later than anybody else, and get in the Guinness Book of Records for the number of hours they meditate. Such people are just driven by ego. They're never going to get anywhere in meditation. The most important thing to do is to make peace with every moment. Whatever you're experiencing, just don't react. Know and let it go. Know and let it go. So if you can't sleep tonight because it's a new place, or maybe, you know, you're not comfortable in your room, just make peace and let it go. Don't fight or make a war. Especially the first day on a retreat, there's always many discomforts. It's the discomfort of the new, when you haven't really settled in to your room, haven't settled into the routine, even haven't settled in to your place here on the in the meditation hall. It takes time. Give it that time, and in the meantime, just don't make any faults. Just leave it, let it go, and after a while, everything comes good all by itself. In the same way that those of you who have come here with great expectations, and have all these ideas of what you want to attain on this retreat and how much you want to get. I don't know, maybe you've made a deal with the organizers, if you don't get jhana you'll demand your money back. Or you come and complain that this retreat wasn't good, it didn't work, I expected much more. Stop expecting, because the more you expect from a retreat, the less you will get. Your job is like to renounce. I don't mean renouncing your money, renouncing your family, renouncing your house, your car and anything else. I'm talking about renouncing the inside world. Especially the wanting and the craving and the expectations and the plans. One of the greatest teachings of the Buddha, it's in the Sapurisa Sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya, is where the Buddha actually said, whatever you expect it to be, it's always something different. And I always like that, because it means that whatever you expect this retreat to be, the Buddha guarantees it will be something much different than you expect or anticipate or plan for. That's the whole of life. I don't know, many of you are getting on just like me. There's very few young people here at this retreat. So you've lived long enough now to know whatever you expect of life, it's never quite like that. The same goes with meditation. So it should be quite plain to you now and clear to you that all expectation, anticipations and plans are a complete waste of time. Whatever you think is going to happen in the next 9 days, I guarantee it will not be like that. So it's best to shut up now and stop wasting precious mental time and just enjoy the moment and never sacrifice this moment for some plan or dream which will never come true for the future. So that way that we make peace in the moment, always in this moment. And if you ever look at the clock, if for those of you who've got the guts to do this, you can actually take off your wristwatch, take off any other clocks, bury them, put them in your bag and don't take them out again till the end of this retreat. You'll know when it's breakfast time, you'll know when it's lunch time. You'll get an idea when it's the time for the talks. But even if it's not, if you have the guts, you don't need to come to the talks. You've got the idea. So what that really means is you get out of this worldly way of running according to time, plans, futures and pasts, all this stuff which we're trapped in, which creates such misery for us. It's the same with all of you who think you've meditated before and you are great meditators, or you have all this experience before. That's going to stop you enjoying this moment. You're just a person who's past it, who lives in the past, who's an historic meditator. When actually you let go of the past, you start afresh, with no history, with no burden to keep you from progressing. The more of the past which we carry around with us, thinking we're an old hand, we've been a Buddhist for such a long time, we've meditated so many retreats. If you think like that, you're someone who just owns the past. And a person who owns the past is someone who's so burdened with the past, they can never be free. It's like carrying heavy weights and heavy burdens. I came late to this retreat today. Sometimes before, when I've come earlier, I've been so surprised at how many suitcases you bring just for a 9-day retreat. It's as if you brought your whole house into this little retreat period. And what do you need? Maybe just one change of clothes, because this is not a fashion parade. No one is going to judge you by what clothes you wear. So you don't need so much here. So I don't know why people bring so much stuff. But nevertheless, you understand how burdensome it is to carry all those suitcases. And this is a simile for what dwelling in the past is like. We can carry so much baggage from our past. In meditation, please never do that. If you start carrying the past, what will happen is you may have a difficult meditation and then you will allow it to spoil your whole day because you don't know how to let go of the past. A person who knows how to let go of the past and live in the present, even during the middle of a meditation, half an hour might have been a rubbish meditation, you can let that go straight away and the next moment can be a beautiful one. Why is it that if you get into a bad stretch, it tends to go on and on and on? Simply because you carry that past into the present. It's the bad day, it's a bad retreat, it's a bad time. You make the present and the future bad. It's not the present or the future is bad, it's what you make of it. So when you learn how to let go of time, it becomes so much easier to meditate. It doesn't matter what's happened earlier on. It doesn't matter what happened a moment ago. I don't give a damn about the past. So all I'm doing is seeing what's happening right now, the present moment. I don't even think about how many more minutes there are to go. Are you thinking of how many more minutes is Ajahn Brahm going to go on to till I can go to bed? If you think like that, you're going to make yourself suffer and suffer and suffer. Now, my teacher Ajahn Chah would sometimes go on for hours. And hours, sometimes he would talk all night. And if you ever thought, when's he going to stop? Then you would suffer. I'll tell you a story. Some of you might know, I usually tell the story at the end of the retreat. I'm going to tell it at the beginning this time. Some of you may remember this story. It was one of the early Western monks who, instead of going to a Thai monastery, went and joined a Korean monastery, which was much tougher than the monasteries I used to go to. And every year they used to have a 60-day retreat, not a 9-day retreat, 60 days. When you get up, not whenever you wanted to, at 3 o'clock in the morning, get up. And you'll be sitting for 50 minutes, walking for 10 minutes, sitting again, walking, sitting and walking. When it became time for the meals, you'd have it right where you sit. It would be served to you, so you wouldn't be able to get up and stretch your legs. To go to the toilet, you had to get permission from the teacher. And in the evening, when it was time to go to bed, you would actually sleep right where you were sitting. So you couldn't just nick off somewhere and get an extra hour. And that was very, very tough for a Westerner, doing all those hours after hours of sitting, and there was no escape. And for those of you who have been on retreats before and have had a sore back or sore knees, you can imagine what a retreat like that would be like. That was just so painful. But this was a tough guy, he was from New Zealand. He kept on meditating and meditating. After about 5 days he'd had enough. His back was aching, his knees were exploding in pain. He couldn't stand it any longer. This sometimes would happen to you if we kept that strict schedule. But for this young man, he looked around and saw all these other Korean monks were sitting straight. If they could do it, I could do it too. Your pride pushed him through for another few days. When the pain ever got too much, he thought, well, I've done 10 days now. I've done 15 days. I've done 20 days. I can't give up now. And he was pushing for the halfway mark. Hopefully none of you ever think like that. How many days of this retreat have gone? How many to go? I'm halfway through. It's almost finished. If you start thinking like that, you've lost the plot. You've actually paid for this. So what are you trying to get rid of it for? You enjoy it. Get the most out of it. So you should never, if you ever think, you think, oh, 3 days have gone, I've only got 6 days left, oh, it's not fair. But anyway, for this monk, after 30 days, when he got to the halfway mark, it was like getting on the home stretch. That doesn't make any sense, completely illogical, but you had to think like that just to push him through. And the pain usually gets worse and worse and more intolerable. And in that retreat, as soon as it got time to go to sleep, you could actually stretch out remember him telling me that he said, even though you could actually sleep for 5 hours, he said some of the other monks, the Korean monks, would deliberately just carry on sitting instead of sleeping. Now the smart asses, you really hate it when you get people like that. When you're in great pain, you see these other people sitting there all the time with a silly smile on their face, you feel like punching their... No, well, you shouldn't do that anyway, but sometimes you feel like it. Especially when you're in great pain. But anyway, he kept on going. And he said even at night time, just the 5 hours which went so quickly. He went unconscious, and then bang, the bell went, he had to start sitting again. It was actually no freedom, no respite. But it finally came to the last week of the retreat. So he's 7 days to go. And as usually happens with such people who count the minutes, the closer you get to the end, the worse the pain gets. This is what happened to him. 7 days, he thought, even though he got that far, he probably couldn't even make it. He'd have to give up, it was just too much. But he pushed and pushed and pushed until he got finally to the last day. Only 1 day to go. When he woke up that morning, his whole body was burning with agony even during the first meditation. But when you've done 59 days and you've got 1 day to go, surely you could endure anything. But sometimes it got so bad he thought he would cry. The 50 minute sit on the last day was like 5 hours. But eventually he came to the very last 50 minutes. When you get to the last at only 50 minutes of a 60-day retreat to go, he thought, I'm going to make it, I'm going to make it. But it's strange, when you think like this, the pain gets even worse. And it began more pain than he ever experienced in his whole life. It got unendurable. Every now and again, he'd open his eyes to peek at the clock. He was sure an hour had gone past. Only 5 minutes. When you're waiting, time stops for you. He told me that he was wondering whether the batteries in the clock had run out. He was sure they were. And wondered what happens if the clock stops altogether and the master doesn't recognize that and they have to sit for 3 hours when it's only supposed to be 50 minutes. And every now and again, he just think, only 50 minutes to go. What I can do in 50 minutes time. There's a hot bath for everyone in Korea after retreats. And there's refreshments. And you could go and walk. You could talk. You could do all those things. Like many of you will be thinking the next couple of days. Oh, only a few more days and I can go and have whatever I like in the evening. Maybe I get myself a pizza. When I get home after retreat, you can imagine what you will do and how you will do it. And this is, I can watch my TV and find out what's happening in the cricket or find out what's, whatever, you start thinking like that. And that's what he was doing. But every time even he just lost himself in his reverie for a second, the pain was so great it just literally smashed down the doors of his mind and came in. It took so long, that last 50 minutes. But like everything, that 50 minutes had to eventually expire. And he heard the most beautiful sound, the master ringing the gong for the end of the retreat. He'd done it. 60 days he'd managed of enduring immense pain, the sorts of things which normal people would not understand, of having to sit and walk for so long. At that moment, his joy of having succeeded just overcame his pain. He couldn't feel the pain and aches in his body. He just felt joy and bring on the bath. And just as usually happens at the end of the retreat, they started to bow to the teacher. And the teacher stopped them. He said he had an announcement to make. He said that during the interview periods, many of the monks had commented how rewarding and valuable this retreat had been. How it had been so special and so valuable to them, they had requested to extend the retreat for another 2 weeks. And the master said, "This is such a good suggestion we decided to extend the retreat for another 15 days. Cross your legs and carry on meditating. At which this New Zealander just went ballistic. His mind was like a volcano. It was exploding, not with Buddhist compassion, but he had more hatred than Osama bin Laden multiplied by 100. He wanted to find out those two or three or four, whoever those smart ass monks were who suggested this, and he was going to torture them before killing them in the most violent and devious ways. He just had enough with these smart addicts who did this and made him have so much pain. And while he was thinking with sheer anger, the bell went again. And about 15 minutes had passed in a flash. When you're angry and upset, it's amazing how much quickly time goes. And it was then the teacher rang the gong and said, "The retreat's over. There's a bath downstairs, refreshment, go and enjoy yourself." At which this New Zealander couldn't understand what was going on. "What do you mean? I thought the retreat was going to last another 2 weeks. Now he says it's over. What's happening?" At which point another monk, a senior monk, came up and told him that the master does the same trick every year. He said he learned more in those 15 minutes about meditation than the whole 60 days. He learned the pain of anticipation. Why, when we're waiting for something to happen, we create suffering for ourselves. The point is, we don't know what's going to happen. We may extend this retreat for another seven days. To hell with your travel plans. The doors are locked, I've got the keys. The point is that why is it that we create such suffering with our anticipations and expectations? That's what it was. He was just looking to the future too often, never into the moment. If you look into the moment, only then are you free. You make peace. You don't just endure for the sake of getting through this. Enjoy this retreat. By enjoying the moment and putting all your energy in just the being here. This afternoon at the Melanoma Foundation talk I gave, I told the old story about the monks who went to the prison and described what monks' life is like. I won't tell you in full, but that's where the prisoners, when they heard how a monk lives in Bodhinyana Monastery in Serpentine, they realize it's far more austere than in prison. We live life much tougher than any prisoner. But of course, as you know, that monks aren't trying to escape or climb the walls. Prisoners will try and escape. And the point is that why? What's the difference between a prison and a monastery, such as Bodhinyana Monastery? There's only one difference there. It doesn't matter how comfortable you make the prison. If you have TVs, if you have a menu, even if you have butlers serving the prisoners food and whatever they like. The only difference is, in a prison, no one wants to be there. In a monastery, people do want to be there. That is the difference between being free and being in jail. Whether you want to be here or you don't want to be here. During this retreat, there are times when this place will be a prison for you. You just don't want to be here. Times when your body is aching, you just don't want to be here. When you're restless or you're bored out of your skull and you don't want to be here. You have just made a prison for yourself. Now you're a prisoner. You're a criminal. Because of your ignorance and stupidity, you put yourself in jail. You can escape in any moment. I don't mean by sort of climbing through the window, calling a taxi and going home. I mean you can escape at any time just by wanting to be here. Whatever you're experiencing, if you don't want it, you're now in jail. If you're happy to be here, then you are free. So when you're meditating, ask yourself, am I happy to be here? Or do I want jhanas? Do I want enlightenment? Now! If that's what you want, you're now in prison. But if you're happy to be here, with this stupid old mind of yours, this restless mind, this mind which has been meditating for years and never even been able to watch three breaths in a row, whatever it is, if you're happy to be here, then you'll find freedom. And once you have freedom, then you'll be able to watch the breath. Not before. There's some recent research from the United States, from a number of universities, where they wanted to answer the question, a great question to ask and answer. Is it that successful people are happy, or is it that happy people are successful? Great question. Does happiness come first and then success, or success first and then happiness? A great little piece of research which showed convincingly, without a shadow of a doubt, happiness comes first, success follows. Not the other way around. Happy people are successful. So you have to develop happiness first before you have success. In the same way, in meditation, you have to develop this peace, this contentment, this wanting to be here first. And then success comes afterwards. When you develop the right attitude first of all, and contentment, wanting to be here, making peace with the moment, only then can you watch the breath for hours. Only then can things like nimittas arise. Only then can you have a possibility of entering jhanas. That happiness called contentment, wanting to be here, has to come first. Not afterwards. Not, I'm going to get into jhana and then I'm going to be happy to be here. No, be happy to be here with what you have now. And all the other things in meditation come as a consequence of that. Attitude is all it takes. Right view, right thought. When you understand that, first two factors of the Eightfold Path, you understand how important they are and how sometimes we forget those when we're on a meditation retreat. So view and attitude is paramount. Get that right and everything flows beautifully, according to nature, fast, without too much problem. So when you're meditating, don't be so demanding. In the evening and the morning time, we're going to be chanting the Metta Sutta in English, which many of you know. We do it in Nalamara, we do it in many other places. There it says, may you, I be contented and easily satisfied, not demanding in nature. It's great words from the Buddha. So are you content and easily satisfied? Or are you only really content and satisfied if you get your best meditation ever during this retreat? Are you demanding in nature? Come on, I'm going to get up early tomorrow morning. I'm going to sit longer than I've ever sat before. If I don't get into deep meditation, I'm going to punish myself. I'm not going to have any latte coffee ever again, or at least for a week, or maybe for a day, or I don't know, whatever else you like. Don't get into such ideas. Be contented and easily satisfied. You're not demanding much. You just sit here and be happy to be with your mind, no matter how it is. If you want to be here, you feel free. That freedom, that contentment, builds up the energy of mindfulness. Which is why, don't try so hard. Let go. Be at peace. You find that that is the way that mindfulness grows. Many people, they try to make mindfulness happen. Come on, be mindful, be alert. Have you ever tried that and failed? You have to know the causes of mindfulness, the causes of awareness. You might get up in the morning and you might sort of throw water in your face to try and wake yourself up. You might take the extra cup of strong coffee, put 2 spoons in this tomorrow morning just to wake yourself up and get going. You may go and do handstands or go running around the park to try and get things going. Still it doesn't work. Those are not the causes of mindfulness. Mindfulness comes from stillness, from resting, and you have some deficit to make up. You've been running so fast, doing so much, you can't expect mindfulness to be strong in the first day or two. Rest the mind. Be still. Don't work so hard. Don't react so much. And you'll find if you follow the instructions properly, you'll find after a couple of days, the mind starts to wake up. And meditation starts to become much easier than you've ever known it before. Simply because you've empowered mindfulness. And you're alert. A natural alertness. Not forced. You've known the causes, you've made those causes, and the results come. And I just get so much fun out of seeing people who've understood this. Seeing people are just so happy in this retreat. And they say, why are they so happy when there's so many things you just can't do? And they're happy because stillness has energized their mindfulness. And the energetic mindfulness is inner happiness. If you understand that, you understand the great teaching of the Buddha. Inner happiness is the energy of mindfulness. So this is actually what we do. So this little talk this evening is just giving you a taste of what's coming. Every morning I'll give a specific talk on meditation or insights, mindfulness, all these things about meditation. And I do that because I want the morning talk to set the theme for the day. That's usually at 8 o'clock. And in the evening time, again, I think was it usually from 8 till 9, we have like a question and answer session where you can put a question on a piece of paper and we'll answer it. And you can also maybe even ask a question from the floor if you really think you need to do so. I know that this can be any sort of question about Buddhism. That's an open time. Because I realise that sometimes by the evening time people are getting quite tired. There's a little bit of fun and games sometimes. Other times it can be some very deep questions which you can ask. And after that, it's free time. If you feel like going to sleep, you can. Or you can stay up and meditate some more. When I don't have any schedule for the morning, sometimes you find that whatever time it is at night, there's always somebody sitting here. Because they're not scared, they can meditate 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, and then they can maybe sleep in after breakfast. You're allowed to sleep at any time during this retreat. Even during my talks, I don't mind. They're recorded, you can catch up on them afterwards. You can even sleep during your lunch as well, but I've never seen that happen yet. Sleeping during my talks, yeah, but never sleeping when they're eating. I wonder why. But the point is that make your own schedule and don't actually plan it in the future. Find out what happens right this moment. How do I feel? Right this moment, sit more, walk. Go to bed, what should I do? If you go to bed, I call that meditating as well. Meditating flat out. So whatever it is, be kind to yourself. And in the mornings, we'll have the morning talk, evening Q&A. And from Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we'll have interview time. Well, I'll give you the opportunity, every one of you, every 2 days, to come and have a personal interview. That is not obligatory. I'll put your name on the piece of paper, post it outside. If you don't want an interview that day, just cross your name off, that's all. But if you want one, you can come and have a chat about your meditation. But please, during interview times, not personal problems, not family problems, not problems about your sex life. Remember, I'm a monk. So keep it just to meditation problems, because this is what we're here for. We do the counselling later on, but not now. And that's, you know, usually about 10-minute session each for everybody. And of course, if there's anything really special that you're really having some problems in meditation or some really fascinating experiences, then you can have like a special interview if necessary. But even those questions which you may have, it's much better, instead of asking me during the interview time, to please write them on a piece of paper so you can share them with others. Because I usually find the question which you have, many other people also have. And so by asking and having them answered in public, it actually helps everybody. So it's a wonderful thing to do, to those deep questions you're having in meditation. Put them on a piece of paper so everyone can share. And that way the meditation retreat just flows very smoothly. And you start to enjoy, after the first couple of days, some nice meditations. We do have the chanting in the morning at 6 and also in the evening at 10 to 8. You don't have to come for the chanting if you don't like it. Or if you're sleepy, you can go and sleep a bit longer. It's just those who want to can come. So everything here is optional. Except for the 8 precepts, you have to keep those. So keep quiet. Shh, and be still. Remember, if anyone speaks, you put your finger in front of your mouth. Shh, just to remind them. So that's basically the retreat, and during the retreat I'll give many deep talks, and hopefully you'll get off on the energy of this place. So that's the schedule here. So are there any comments or questions which you have about what we're doing here? First talk tomorrow will be on basic meditation. Don't really mind what meditation you've done before, because basically all meditation is the same. That's why I tell the story that somebody once, they said they couldn't do breath meditation. So if they couldn't do breath meditation, I decided to teach them Anapanasati instead. So you get the story there. Anapanasati is the Pali word for breath meditation. So they can't do breath meditation, I teach them metta meditation. If they can't do metta, I teach them loving kindness. Because they're all exactly the same, they're stilling the mind, making it peaceful. And sometimes people say, I don't like samatha, do vipassana. Okay, do vipassana. If they don't like vipassana, do samatha. They're all exactly the same. People think there is some difference there, but there is not. There's only what I call 2 different types of meditation. And I call those 2 different types of meditation Second Noble Truth Meditation and Third Noble Truth Meditation. For those of you who know your Buddhism, the Second Noble Truth is craving is the cause of suffering. Third Noble Truth is letting go is the cause for Nibbana, ultimate happiness. So, Second Noble Truth Meditation is crave, 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 crave. I want, I want, I want. If you are craving, you're doing Second Noble Truth Meditation. Where does that lead to? Suffering. Dummy. So no wonder your meditation doesn't work when you want so much. That's called craving. It leads to suffering. The Buddha said that. So if you do the Third Noble Truth Meditation, letting go, contentment, making peace, renouncing, where does that lead to? Nibbana, ultimate happiness. So there you got the basic teaching of meditation. So I say there's 2 types of meditation. Second Noble Truth Meditation, crave, crave, want, want, desire, desire. And that leads to suffering. No, it didn't work, I didn't get what I wanted. Of course you didn't get what you want. You just were craving, that leads to suffering. What do you expect? But when you let go, make peace, renounce, this is good enough. No expectations. That's the Third Noble Truth Meditation. That leads to Nibbana. The word for Buddha, it literally means the awakened one. That's what it feels like. You're awakening. Mindfulness is getting stronger. You see more, you feel more, everything is more bright, alert, like you're waking up from a dream. Even like when you first wake up in the morning, you're not fully awake, are you? Sometimes you get up and you hit your arm on the basin or something. You know, you try and brush your teeth and you put the toothpaste on the wrong end. Whatever else people do these days when they get up. You're not alert, you're not awake yet. But you know, after a while, you know, you sort of do exercise or have a cup of coffee, then eventually you wake up. Now imagine that sort of increasing. So you more and more wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up. So you don't do the meditation like putting the toothpaste on the wrong end. You don't do the meditation in the wrong way. Whatever you do, you can see what needs to be done. You do it and you're successful. You're alert, wise. That's what we call waking up. You take that to the limit until you are the fully awakened one. Mindfulness is so strong and powerful, so blissed out, that whatever you see it as it truly is. As the Buddha said many, many times, Samadhi Pachaya Yata Buddhayana Dasana. It is from that stillness that you see things as they truly are. You're awake. So this is what happens in this retreat. Wake up call to samsara. So that's what it's going to be doing here during the next few days. So for the second time, is there any comments or questions? Okay, enough. So I'll see you tomorrow morning, maybe, maybe not, who knows, no expectations. For those of you who want to try the flat out meditation, and go back to your room. Those of you who are smart asses and want to sort of sit and impress other people, you can carry on sitting here and just show how great you are. For those of you who are wise, you will just look at your mind, look at your body and think what's needed and do it. And don't give a damn what other people think. This is your retreat in the moment. See what you need and do it kindly and make peace with every moment. Okay, enough.